wishes life to pass away. But life presents us possibilities each and every day. I heard a calling that was right for me. I prayed for strength for what's ahead of me. Show me the sun rose high and burnt the night away. Who stood before me was my enemy.
Don't tread on me.
He's come to take away my liberties. I'd rather die than be a slave to thee.
Don't tread on me this way.
I'd rather die.
Gung-ho greetings. Welcome to the U.S. Phone Force, the talk show that leads the way. My name is Tom Kovach. Perhaps you've read my column at Renew America or WorldNet Daily. My signature column is a series called Short Burst. If you served in the military, as I did, then perhaps you've worn a little gizmo called the Kovach Clip, which I invented. Or maybe you're one of the 49,000 people that voted for me in the last election for Congress in the Nashville area. Regardless of how you found the program, welcome to the U.S. Phone Force. Prepare for takeoff. Today is Sunday, 13 January 2008. There are several ways to contact the U.S. Phone Force. The call-in number is toll-free, 1-800-313-9443. Tell all of your friends to tune in to the U.S. Phone Force and to support our sponsors. As we gain more listening members of the U.S. Phone Force, the program will continue to add improvements. You can also visit my website at www.tomkovach.us. Remember, Kovach is spelled K-O-V-A-C-H, just like it sounds. You can email the show at radio@tomkovach.us. Again, that email address is radio@tomkovach.us. Remember, that's .us, not .com. This is my premier show on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I did have a webcast talk show before this on another network. And so I'd like for us to get to know each other and encourage you to call in. I would like to start this show in getting to know you with a couple of items of what I consider talk radio etiquette. One of them is please don't waste airtime. Now, I've listened to Republic Broadcast shows, and I have to agree with Republic's president, John Stadtmiller. He issued me kind of a brag and a warning simultaneously. He said that this is the most educated audience in talk radio. And from what I've heard, I believe it, and most of you get right to it. But if you would, please don't waste airtime with things like personal questions. In other words, you call a talk show to talk about a topic. Don't start with a question like, how are you? Does it really matter? You called to talk about a topic. Let's talk about the topic. For the most part, we can talk about any topic that you like. Given that this is Truth Radio on Republic Broadcasting Network, there are two topics that I feel don't lend themselves to discussion. One is sports. If you would like to talk about sports, there are sports networks that you can call, sports stations that you can call, sports hosts that you can call. I'm not one of them. The other thing is that I don't discuss my family on the air, and I think that's a rule that most professional hosts abide by. I will make occasional references to my sweet wife, but beyond that, I don't go into details. So those are the only two topics that we won't discuss. If you'd like to get to know me better, in addition to the website, you can go to the website and find my book, which is called Slingshot. To give you some idea why it's called that, on the cover there is a picture of David hurling a stone at Goliath. That is a summary of much of my life, David versus Goliath, and we'll get to that in just a minute. I do like to talk about my military career, and I was blessed to have a varied military career, and certainly encourage those of you that are in the military to call in, and I know there are a lot of you listening. The other thing is that the reason I was offered this particular slot on the Republic Broadcasting Network is that the network president, John Stattmiller, had read about my recent actions in a lawsuit against the governor of Tennessee. And we will talk about that in the next segment, so let me just give you a little bit of a heads up what that's about. Here in Tennessee, where I'm based, just outside of Nashville, the governor of Tennessee has a pet project. Now, it's actually his wife's pet project. And on the surface, it's actually a good one. But like anything good that's placed in the hands of bad politicians, it's turning bad. Let me explain. The governor's mansion is a historic residence. It was built about 100 years ago, and it was donated to the state by its previous owner, who was the president of an insurance company. So the state has owned this house, which is a very nice house in a very upscale neighborhood, has owned it since 1949. Tennessee is a good-sized state. It's very long. It's not too high, if you will, from north to south, but it's very long from east to west. And since the governor could come from any part of the state, it makes sense for the governor to have a residence here in the state capital. However, that does not necessarily mean that it has to be opulent, etc. And now we come to the rub. The First Lady convinced the state legislature to appropriate money to renovate the governor's mansion. It was in disrepair in certain areas. The roof was leaking, plaster was cracked, paint peeling, etc., etc. And it did need to be updated. However, what started as a $350,000 renovation project 7 years ago has now grown to the point of being over $19 million. Why? Because the First Lady had it in her mind that she would like to have an underground dining and party facility in the front yard of the governor's mansion, which, in order to make it sound a little better, she has dubbed the executive residence. Now, every other state that has a governor's mansion calls it the governor's mansion. If you look on a map of Tennessee and pull up a view of Nashville, you will find that on all of the maps it is marked as the governor's mansion. However, the First Lady would like us all to change and call it the executive residence. Now, why she thinks that sounds any better is beyond me, but anyway, an underground party hall, 2 floors deep. They will need to blast. Tennessee is rather rocky. The terrain in that particular neighborhood is rolling, so almost every house in that upscale neighborhood is on its own little knoll, and you will have to blast into the rock 40 feet deep. The road is barely 2 lanes wide with steep ditches on either side. There are no sidewalks in that neighborhood. And I have had one engineer tell me that the blasting could create an underground pressure wave that will send sewage and drain water up into the surrounding homes. Now, it gets worse than that, but the bottom line is that they were pressing ahead with this project, and I filed a lawsuit pro se to stop the governor. And so there were some wealthy people in the neighborhood. They started a watchdog group, and the watchdog group took some PR actions. They bought colorful ads in the newspaper. They started a website. They printed up a slick brochure. However, is that what it takes to stop a runaway government? Now, ask yourself, will that really work? Do you think a politician like that will repent from this pet project? I don't think so. And so I filed this lawsuit. In the meantime, the watchdog group that was headed up by these wealthy people got lots of radio airtime. I would call in on the local talk shows and get maybe 2 minutes. And in the meantime, I was the only one taking meaningful action to stop this project. Now, I had someone email me about this just recently, and I summed it up by saying, you don't bring a paintbrush to a gunfight. So did these wealthy people offer me a penny to help with the cost of the lawsuit? No. Did they offer to hire me as a consultant, seeing as how they had a $30,000 budget to do what should have only taken a few hundred dollars? No, didn't offer me a penny. Didn't hire me as a consultant, stood by and watched. In the meantime, the state brought in a senior attorney from the Office of the Attorney General and met me in court on a pretrial motion and got the case dismissed. Now, the state legislature has just come back in session, but because the Attorney General's office has issued a legal opinion, they don't have much to go on. The only way to stop this project was with a lawsuit. But the rich people didn't file one. They were waiting until the legislature came back in session, and now it's too late. So what do you think? The call-in number is 1-800-313-9443. Call in, become a member of the U.S. Phone Force. Now, in segment two, we're going to talk about this lawsuit. We'll go into a little bit more detail. And in segment three, I want to talk about something called Project Warrior Bonus. If you have the opportunity to look that up on the Internet, it's Project Warrior Bonus. I would especially like to hear from our military members in the audience about this. In segment four, we'll open it up to any topic. And segment five, we'll recap and get ready for the second hour. I have a nationally known guest lined up for the second hour, so make sure that you stay tuned to the U.S. Phone Force here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Again, my name is Tom Kovach. I'm your host. This is the U.S. Phone Force. If you'd like to learn more about me or the program, you can visit my website at www.tomkovach.us. Kovach is spelled K-O-V-A-C-H, just like it sounds. It rhymes with watch. Does not rhyme with pack, does not rhyme with patch. There are only six letters. There are seven different ways to mispronounce it, but it's Kovach. Okay, now getting back to our lawsuit against the Bredesen Bunker, which is the nickname for this underground party hall, which the First Lady has dubbed Conservation Hall. Now, there's a strange irony in this that the news media has not reported, and that is that the original name was Conservatory Hall, not Conservation Hall. Now, I don't know if this ended up as a typo in the architect's plans or how the name exactly got changed. Perhaps when she wanted to change the name of the governor's mansion to the executive residence, and perhaps at that time she changed the name of the party hall to Conservation Hall because most of us commoners don't use words such as conservatory. But however it happened, it's now officially called Conservation Hall. Now, can any of you explain to me how blasting a 40-foot hole in the ground big enough to drop in 2 3-bedroom houses side by side is conservation? Can anyone explain to me how having an oval shape of 38-foot-high glass panels underground so that you can grow one tree is conservation? 1-800-313-9443 for the U.S. phone force. Now, let me explain a little bit about this bunker and why there is so much objection to it. The neighbors are objecting because of the size of the project. They're objecting because of the potential for damage to their own homes, because of the blasting, because of the construction vehicles, et cetera, et cetera. They're objecting because it will change the ambiance of the neighborhood. The problem is it goes far beyond that. The reason it goes far beyond that is because the governor has admitted that this project was intentionally designed to be large enough for the entire membership of both houses of the state legislature to sit for dinner in this underground party hall. Now, it has seating for dinner for 160, and that's with room for the servers to get in between all the tables, et cetera, et cetera. I'm guessing that it will take a staff of at least 20 to 30 people to handle one of these dinners. Now, in addition, I ran the numbers. If you seat the governor, his staff, well, the governor, the lieutenant governor, both houses of the state legislature, which is called the General Assembly here in Tennessee, if you seat all of those members in this dinner, there will be room left over for about 24 lobbyists in an underground facility surrounded by state troopers. Can anybody see what's wrong with that picture? Now, let's take the dining tables out of the hall and let's let all these people mingle. There is now room, by the state's own admission, for 500 people to party underground. Now, according to one civil engineer that I've spoken with, there's actually room for quite a bit more than 500 people. But let's use the state's own admitted conservative numbers. Why do we need to have 500 people partying underground at taxpayer expense? And the $19 million, by the way, is a pre-construction cost estimate. Those of you that have dealt with large construction projects know that pre-construction cost estimates never really quite work. Now, the other thing is that here in Tennessee, we have an unfortunate tradition of having huge cost overruns in state-funded highway projects. Interestingly, one of the people that has apparently achieved a construction contract for part of this facility is a big contributor to Governor Phil Bredesen. Now, I already see a lot of problems with this, but it goes even farther than that. There are safety issues. There are zoning issues. There are issues with traffic. There are all kinds of problems with this facility. But the biggest problem, and I cannot believe that people don't see this, here in the local area, I speak with people that deal with politics routinely, and Nashville is the state capital. And yet, I have people saying to me, Tom, what's the big deal? And the problem is that there's a huge deal. The problem is these people are going to get away with it. And as I've written in the lawsuit itself and in opinions, if this facility is built, if they blast that hole into the ground, then the will of the people will be buried therein. That's the bottom line. So, what do you think? 800-313-9443. 313-943-9443 to call in to the U.S. Phone Force on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Tom Kovac. Let's talk about those safety issues. One of the safety issues has to do with the fact that the road, because it is narrow, cannot handle enough fire engines. It can handle enough fire engines for the average house. Now, the houses in that area have a minimum 1 acre yard. However, most of the houses there in that neighborhood have yards that are 3 to 5 acres. So, how do you get all of the fire safety equipment in there? We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the other safety issues. We'll talk about the response. We'll talk about the court's comments in the lawsuit. We'll talk about all of those details when we come back after this upcoming break. Again, you're listening to the U.S. Phone Force on the Republic Broadcasting Network. My name is Tom Kovac. We'll be back after this. My name is Tom Kovac. I'm your host, and the call-in number here is 313-943-9443. We're talking about my lawsuit against the governor of Tennessee for his planned building of an underground party hall in front of the governor's mansion in the state capital city of Nashville, Tennessee. Now, let me, if you've just tuned in, let me give you the quick run-up to where we're going with this. The First Lady brought to the attention of the state legislature the need to renovate the governor's mansion. There were physical problems with the home. And by the way, I didn't mention this before the break, but to help you have some understanding of how they can do this enormous construction project, Governor Phil Bredesen was a wealthy businessman before he became the mayor of Nashville. He was mayor of Nashville, and then after that, he ran for governor of Tennessee and was elected in 2000. And so Governor Bredesen and his wife live in their own home on the west side of Nashville. And so they don't need to live in the governor's mansion. Therefore, they're able to give the state this golden opportunity to do these repairs. And that's great. Even the opponents of this construction project are all for the renovation. What we're against is the expansion. And we're against the expansion for a number of reasons, not the least of which is the fact that the governor has admitted that the expanded underground party hall will be large enough to seat for dinner the entire membership of both houses of the state legislature, with room left for about two dozen lobbyists. Underground, on the property of the governor's mansion, surrounded by state troopers. What's wrong with that picture? Now, before the break, I mentioned that we'd go into some other details about this. Let me give you the run-up here. Wealthy neighbors surrounding the governor's mansion formed a watchdog group called Tennesseans for Accountability in Government, otherwise TAG. And TAG hired a PR consultant. They took out some ads in the newspaper. They printed a brochure, and they got some talk radio time. However, they didn't file a lawsuit. I saw this thing coming like a runaway train down the track, and I said the only way to derail this project is to take swift legal action. So I filed a pro se lawsuit against the governor. Now, we'll get into those details, but we have a caller, Thomas, from Arizona, and I suspect that he has a question that may go right where we're going.
Yes,
Thomas,
hello. How you doing?
Welcome to the U.S. Phone Force.
Well, welcome to your flagship show, huh?
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, your volume's a little bit low there.
Thomas, I'm having a little trouble hearing you, so please speak up.
Okay, how's this? Is this better?
That's better. I know that it's not the line because I was speaking with the producer during the break, and I could hear him fine. So if you're on a cordless phone, maybe get closer to the base.
Well, I'm right next to the base. Anyway, I could always call you back on my cell phone. Maybe do better. Hey,
okay, I can hear you better now.
How about telling me, where is the funding for this project coming from?
That is a great question, and that is the subject of much debate, and I'll tell you why. The First Lady claims that she has collected enough private donations to fund the entire underground party hall, but the numbers keep changing. The other problem is that the money, no matter how much or how little there is being donated to a corporation called the Tennessee Residents Foundation. The Tennessee Residents Foundation is a state corporation which was created by fiat of the General Assembly in 1999. Now, when the current First Lady came in, she changed the name. I hear the break music coming up, so I'm going to try and get this in real quick. This foundation, is, according to my lawsuit, was created illegally.
Their bodies down on a bloody war and liberty for their descendants. Thanks to the renegades, we're free today. Thanks to the renegades, we're free today.
All right, welcome back to the U.S. Phone Force on the Republic Broadcasting Network. You may have noticed, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a few technical glitches on today's program. Those are out of my control, and those have to do with things that occurred or didn't occur during the week at the network headquarters. So not anything I have control over, nor anything that our current live producer has any control over. So we're going to wing it as best we can, and I think we're doing all right so far. Now, before the break, Thomas asked a question, and that was about the funding for this project. Now, by various estimates reported in the news, First Lady Andrea Conte, by the way, she does not use her husband's name, Governor Phil Bredesen, but Ms. Conte has collected somewhere between $4 and $8 million. So we have an estimate that could be 100% off or 50% off, depending on which way you look at the same numbers. But either way, the estimate is off. And again, the estimate, regardless of how much it is going into a corporation that I maintain was created illegally. And once this state corporation was created, the state legislature basically took their hands off the wheel and went on to something else. And now the First Lady is running the project. Now, get this, and we have a couple of callers waiting, so I'll try and sum this up as quickly as we can, because I know RBN callers tend to ask very educated questions. But in the court arguments, which you can see on my website, www.tomkovach.us, you can see both my legal papers and the state attorney's legal papers on my website, and you will see that the state attorney actually argued that the First Lady of Tennessee is a state official, and therefore, under a doctrine called sovereign immunity, which I also maintain is unconstitutional, but under that doctrine, which they invoked, the First Lady cannot be sued. I sued the governor, the First Lady, the Tennessee Residents Foundation, and the state of Tennessee, and one attorney, a taxpayer-funded attorney from the state attorney general's office, appeared in court on behalf of all, count them, all defendants. Okay, let's go to Mike in Maryland. And, Mike, welcome to the U.S. Phone Force.
Thank you for taking my call. It's like the old cliche, how can you tell when a politician is lying?
His lips are moving.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. And, that was definitely made popular during the Bill Clinton regime.
Well, they're all liars anyway, with a few exceptions.
Well, thank you for saying a few exceptions, because I have run for Congress twice myself, and there is a possibility that I'll run again this election cycle, if for no other reason than to have a bully pulpit, so that I can rub this in the face of Governor Bredesen at every opportunity.
Well, you know, I'm sure, you know, there may be some corporate contributions, but I think when you dig down to the nitty-gritty, you're going to find that the taxpayers are going to fund the lion's share of it. And
absolutely. That's already been proven. I have copies of the state audit reports, and if you go from year to year, there is no linear progression in this money or in the private donations. It seems to get kind of blurry throughout the entire timeline.
But before I get down to the main text of my statement, I would like to mention something about the financial situation that can maybe help you out here.
Okay.
Before I get off the air. But,
lay it on me, Mike.
Okay, sure. Well, let me just say that, you know, I think once you finally delve further into it, you'll find out that it'll be not only the legislators and their pet lobbyists, but their wives and husbands and children. And then you'll find out, well, it's meant to be for several weeks. So basically, what I'm trying to get to the bottom of is, what do they know that we don't know that they need a safe haven for them, for to save their sorry asses?
Let's try and keep the language clean. I know sometimes it's difficult when we get fired up. I have the same problem.
Yeah.
So I try to make an extra effort while we're on the radio. But
well, I was talking about their donkeys.
Is that,
I'm kidding.
What has already been proven by a blogger named Bill Hobbs. Bill Hobbs has been a political blogger in the Nashville area for many years, and he is now the state spokesman for the Tennessee Republican Party. In other words, he's my political counterpart. I am the state spokesman for the Constitution Party. And in an interesting twist, I ran for Congress in the last election cycle on the Republican line, even though I'm a member of the Constitution Party. And so to get back to the question that you raised, which was a very good one, under this legal doctrine that this state attorney is trying to bring in, the First Lady is an official of the state. And by extension, as you mentioned, then where does it end? If they have children, do their children become officials of the state? Does that make the wife of the lieutenant governor an official of the state? My wife works for the state. Am I an official of the state? Where does it end? And so that is a very serious problem. Now, to get back to what you said about the finances, Bill Hobbs has done a lot of legwork. I think he has an accounting background, and he has done the lion's share of the research on the financial end of this. I did the legal research about the creation of the Tennessee Residents Foundation and the legal process, which I declare is illegal and unconstitutional. And so where does it end? And so I just don't know. And like I say, the only way that we're going to get to this is we're going to have to pursue this as a lawsuit. And my lawsuit was dismissed under two doctrines. One in particular was the primary argument, and both of these doctrines, I believe, are in and of themselves unconstitutional. But in order to maintain this action, I will now have to file an appeal, and I don't have the resources. So I would offer to you, the listeners of Republic Broadcasting, my own appeal, and that is that on that same website where you can read those legal documents, www.tomkovach.us, just below the link for those legal documents, you will see a mailing address where you can send a personal gift. Now, notice that I did not say a contribution, because a contribution goes to an organization. I am not going to create an organization to maintain my pro se legal action. However, if you would like to send a personal gift, knowing that it will be used wisely, you can send $1, $5, $10, $20, whatever you like. But if every listener were to send only $1, I could file an appeal. And so let's do that, because, by the way, the judge is forcing me to pay the legal costs for this, since the case was dismissed. So this is a problem. Even though it's pro se, there are costs associated. All right, let's go to Kentucky now. And Mike, welcome to the U.S. Phone Force.
I guess the governor's not worried about that underground facility being flooded. We got that Wolf Creek Dam up here in Kentucky that, for any number of reasons, talking about it maybe collapsing or whatever.
Do me a favor. Don't blow the Wolf Creek Dam, okay?
What
don't
now?
Go up there and blow the dam.
Well, they
because
say,
my
if that collapses,
the
flood
the
part
river.
Of Nashville.
But, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that live outside of the Tennessee-Kentucky borderline area, the Wolf Creek Dam is a dam in northeastern Kentucky in a rural area.
No, it's in southeastern Kentucky, but yeah, it's on a Lake Cumberland's dam.
Right, southeast Kentucky near northeast Tennessee. I misspoke. Thank you.
Right. Yeah.
And that dam feeds into tributaries into the Cumberland River. And if that dam were to break, some analysts believe that it would send a flood wall downriver, a wall of water that could do to Nashville or to cities upriver from Nashville what the Susquehanna River did to Johnstown, Pennsylvania, approximately 100 years ago.
Or the Grand Tetons in Idaho. That was an earthen dam out in Idaho, and it flooded Boise, I think, or... I'm trying to remember. It devastated several towns out in Idaho when that happened. They've sawed that dam in half to put a concrete wall in it, and they're injecting concrete and all the sub rock around it because it's leaking all around the thing.
Wow.
I guess they're not worried about that.
Mike, since you bring up the topic of water, I wasn't going to go into this because I think that the details I've presented already are going to send people's blood pressure up, but
yeah.
As long as we're driving the blood pressure up, hey, let's go for it all. One of the features of this facility, because of the rolling terrain in the neighborhood and even in front of the governor's mansion, which sits on its own knoll, because they're going to blast into the rock, et cetera, this glass atrium that I mentioned will be the only thing that sticks up out of the ground. It's going to stick up about 3 feet out of the ground. So there's this oval-shaped, glass-paneled atrium. And the panels are 38 feet high, so about 35 feet of that will be underground, and about 3 feet will stick up over the top. Now, their concept is that this is going to have the appearance of a shimmering pond to passersby. Now, I don't know about you. I mean, I'm older than I used to be, and my eyesight's not what it used to be, but I can still tell glass from water. But just to make sure that it has the appearance of a shimmering pond, they're going to pipe in water. On the uphill side of this glass atrium, there are going to be little bitty water pipes sticking up on the uphill side that are going to run water across the glass so that it has the appearance of a pond. Now, there are a few problems with that, okay? Problem number one, if there's no wind, why will there be waves on the pond?
Mm.
Problem number two, if there is wind, won't it kind of send the water up in the air off the glass, look like ocean spray? Ponds don't have spray. Problem number three, what happens in cold weather? Okay, but here's the problem that a guy with a background like mine will ask you about, okay? Because of my background in the military, and you can see that, you can see my military resume on my website, but I was involved in the design and security of some pretty high-level facilities in the Air Force. And they're trying to advertise this Conservation Hall as a green facility. And why is it a green facility? Well, it has one tree, okay? So what does the one tree do? Well, granted, it might help with the air quality when you get all of those politicians underground talking at the same time. So the tree needs some sunlight, so they had to stick the atrium up above ground level. Why is the water really going to run over the glass atrium so that nobody can use a laser mic and hit the glass and hear what's going on underground? The flowing water will distort the beams of the laser and therefore garble the speech in case anybody tries to hear what's going on underground. Hello?
Yep. That, I never thought about that, but that's true. If anybody wants to see that depicted in a movie, it's in, Clear and Present Danger. In the movie Clear and Present Danger, they use a laser mic to hear the drug lord making a deal with a member of the president's cabinet.
That's correct. I believe there's also shown the use of one in the movie Enemy of the State.
Well, that's it. Enemy of the State. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I think that's the one I'm thinking of.
Now, the thing is, I knew about laser mics 20 years before the movie came out.
So, yeah, that's the way a lot of stuff is, man.
After that movie, Enemy of the State, came out, I had, and my joke, I tell people, you know, when people say to me, well, Tom, what did you do in the Air Force? The short version is that I was a paid professional paranoid for Uncle Sam. Okay? And so...
What's that quote from Hoover? The individual is handicapped when he comes across a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists. Have you heard that quote? What I wanted to get touch on was the comprehensive annual financial reports about how this allows them to discuss their deals, you know, without any kind of media scrutiny and stuff that for cronyism. And a lot of people, I guess, aren't aware that even for-profit companies can be owned, I think, up to 85% by the government holdings here in Kentucky. And if you start paying attention, you'll get little hints and tips of that in the news, like the University of Kentucky here sold its stake in a for-profit health insurance company called CHA Health, and they owned 85% of it. And that's, you know, a university owning a for-profit venture. So they need a place to get together and talk about all their deals and swaps and trades and, you know, all the political stuff that they do to make these deals. But I just wonder, you know, what stated purpose have they had for this other than security?
Oh, Mike, I am so glad you asked that. See, whenever you apply logic to this situation, their position falls apart. And here's a quintessential example. Governor Bredesen said on a televised interview in response to my announcement that I was going to sue him, he said that would be a bad idea because stopping this facility could hurt the state of Tennessee because this underground party hall that holds 500 people for a reception or 160 for dinner, this underground party hall was needed for, quote, business recruitment, unquote. Now, there are two ways that falls apart. And by the way, Mike, thanks for the call.
I was going to mention that we're not privy to the deals that they make to bring companies into Kentucky either, and I'm sure you guys aren't. They make deals for blocks of stock, and like Toyota, when they brought that in, that came out in the last governor's race, which was kind of ironic because that happened 20-some years ago. The state got a huge blocks of stock in Toyota. Where'd all the money for the dividends and stuff go? It doesn't go into the budget.
Exactly, Mike. Now get this, okay? In this televised interview, when he said it was used for business recruitment, well, I was at a public meeting of the Oak Hill Planning Commission, which is the local entity that has the authority over the zoning regulations, and this facility violates many of the local zoning regulations, and the state is just steamrolling over this and saying, well, it doesn't matter, we're the state, we'll do what we want.
Well, even with the legal amount of blasting that they're talking about, blasting this rock, they're going to damage people's swimming pools and house foundations and stuff for blocks around. We've had that happen here, even with the legal amount of explosives.
Correct.
It ruins people's property to blast into that kind of bedrock. I'll let you go.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I want to answer your first.
I'm paying attention. I'm going to listen off air. I got to go.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you again for the call, Mike. And to answer this question, when I was at this public meeting of the Oak Hill Planning Commission on the 20th of December, and by the way, this is when the engineering plans were released from the architect to the zoning people, was the day before the 19th. In other words, 6 days before Christmas. But the 19th was a Wednesday, and so the Christmas weekend started that Friday evening. So in essence, 2.5 days before Christmas, the architect released the plans to the Zoning Commission. Now, when I was at that public meeting and the topic of business recruitment was brought up, well, one of the people in the room, you have to remember, this is one of the wealthiest neighborhoods in the state of Tennessee. And one of the people in the room was involved in the financing when the Nissan Corporation brought the factory to Smyrna, which is a small city just south of Nashville. And that person mentioned that when the Nissan Corporation was negotiating with the state of Tennessee and sent a delegation to meet with the governor to broker the largest such deal ever in the history of the state of Tennessee, the Nissan Corporation sent exactly three people. Yet we need an underground party facility that holds 500 for business recruitment. Give me a break. Now, we had some technical difficulty earlier in the program, and so coming back to us from Maryland, we have Mike, who says he has one more point to make. And, Mike, I need to tell you that the normal talk show etiquette is that you don't call the same show twice. However, as a caller, I've done it myself when I felt that I didn't quite get through. And I will tell you that callers on RBN get a lot more airtime than on conventional talk show programs. So, Mike, if you'll please make your point.
Yeah, sure. Hello?
Hello, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I just want to reiterate what the previous guy said, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. I don't know if you're aware of that, but it's a double set of books, and it's a great way to embarrass politicians and governments, because if you go to – I want you to, folks at home that are listening, or you maybe to write this down. If you go to www.cafr1.com, that's CAFR, C-A-F-R, the number 1.com, or CAFRMAN.com, it explains what the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, and you can Google it on you know, on the internet, and it lists how governments and universities and whatever invest money. So and they're always crying for more taxes, but they really have a lot more money on the books than people think they have. So it's a great way for you to embarrass the government and to expose their finances and what really goes on behind the scenes. So I just wanted to mention that to you.
Mike, let me ask you a question. Do you have a financial background?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I've written down that website, and for those of you listening, one more time, that's www.cafr1.com, Comprehensive Annual Financial Report.
And CAFRMAN.com. And Walter Burian is a great guy. He runs a website. He's a prince of a guy. You can get on his mailing list, his emailing list. He's a heck of a good guy. He'll be happy to answer any questions. He's a relentless pursuer of the truth. And it's a great site. And I think it would help you out immensely if you can Google it on the internet and get the entire report for the state of Tennessee or any state or any city.
Mike, I want to give you a little hint from when I took an effective writing course about 23 years ago, and that is that when you call in, sometimes what you need to do is make your bottom line your top line. So that is a great point, and I'm glad you called back. Call the show anytime, and I want to give an example of what Mike just brought up from where I used to live before I lived in Tennessee. And that was in upstate New York, and in about 1970, the city of Johnson City, New York, said that they needed a new high school. Why did they need a new high school? Oh, by gosh, the old historic high school in downtown Johnson City was too small. It was dilapidated. Oh, dear, bricks were going to fall and kill students at any time, blah, blah, blah. So they built this brand new high school. Now, what were they going to do with the old high school? Well, nobody knew. They didn't want to tear it down because it was a beautiful historic building. And so they left it up for a few years empty, and then a businessman bought it. And he called it, I forget the exact name, but it was a local, like a indoor business park kind of facility. And all of the classrooms became offices and restaurants and coffee shops and that kind of thing. There were doctor's offices. There were accounting offices, personnel agency, different businesses. What about the gymnasium? The gymnasium became one of these places where they sell tools and hardware at giant discounts. Like, say, for example, if a construction firm goes out of business and an auctioneer gobbles up all of the equipment, the stuff that he does not auction off ends up in one of these wholesale places, and you can go in there and buy industrial quality power drills, for example, for a dime on the dollar. And this thing has been in business since the high school was closed in 1970, and not one brick has fallen on a customer, not one floor has caved in, et cetera, et cetera. And yet the politicians just had to have a brand new high school. Now, what did they do with that brand new high school? Well, they gave it an address, 666 Reynolds Road, Johnson City, New York, and that was where a program called outcome-based education was birthed. Ladies and gentlemen, when they tell you they just have to have a new facility to do something, the question is, what are they going to do? Okay, so that is an important question, and we need to keep that in mind. And this is why we need talk radio. This is why we need citizen activists. This is why we need the truth that you don't get in the lamestream news media. This is why Republic Broadcasting Network has the most educated audience in talk radio. I want to thank President John Stadtmiller for giving me this opportunity to host my own program, the U.S. Phone Force, here on Republic Broadcasting Network. I've been doing citizen activism for a lot of years. I've been writing columns online now for nearly 5 years, and this is the kind of thing that we need to do. If you don't know how to file a pro se lawsuit, maybe you need to find out. I have wanted to write a book on that topic, and I may just do that. In order to do that, we need for you listeners to be able to support our sponsors, and that's an important aspect of the entire picture of Republic Broadcasting Network, or really any particular broadcasting entity, is that we need to support our sponsors. So when those breaks come and you hear their commercial ads, please visit our sponsors, tell them that you heard about it on the Republic Broadcasting Network, on the U.S. Phone Force with Tom Kovach. Those are important things that you can do ultimately to help get the word out, to help support the network, help support your hosts, so that we can keep up the pressure on these wayward politicians. Okay, that call-in number again is 1-800-313-9443. And in the second hour of the U.S. Phone Force, we will have a nationally known columnist who has some very important information to let you know about behind the presidential candidates and who they want to put in what positions. Keep your ears tuned to this program. Again, my name is Tom Kovach. This is the U.S. Phone Force on Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN. And you can visit my website at www.rbn.com.